This week I read a book called Emily, it's a book about, I have a cousin, actually a lot of cousins out in Oregon on my mom's side, and one of them is Paul Smucker, and he has a daughter named Emily, and the book is about part of her life, some of the things that she experienced. Several years ago, actually it was the fall of 2007, she was going into her senior year of high school, and she came down with an illness, kind of a mysterious illness, and she's always kind of struggled with, has been more sick than her siblings and her family, but this was even worse so. She was sick for a while and then seemed to get a little bit better and then got sick again, kind of went through these stages, and it drug on from days to weeks to months. And I wonder, the story, the book here that's written is some of her diary, her experiences during that time. And I wanted to share just a little bit out of this book or diary. She says, "It's been 4 months since I got sick. Since then, I've been well for 3 weeks, near the beginning, but it probably wasn't true wellness. More like an illusion that I was well, though the West Nile was still there. They eventually diagnosed this as West Nile virus. Dormant, waiting to attack again. Assuming, of course, that West Nile is what I actually have. Part of me thought I'd be well by Christmas. The other part of me thought I would never get better. I pushed everything up to that deadline. If I can get well by Christmas, I told myself, I'll be able to graduate this year without too much of a problem. That was my main goal. But look here, Christmas is gone, school is starting tomorrow, and I'm not going. I used to have my life planned out. If you asked me, 'Are you going to college?' I would say, 'Next year, I'll probably take a few courses at a community college, especially writing courses.' If you ask me, 'Are you going to Bible school?' I would say, 'I'll probably go to BMA Bible Institute next year.' And most of all, if you ask me, 'Are you going to graduate this year?' I would say, 'Yes.' I suppose they weren't definite plans, but they were plans. And now, I have no plans. Because now if you ask me, 'Are you going to college?' I will say, 'Well, maybe. But I'm afraid I could get sick in the middle of classes, and then where would I be? Or maybe if the effects of West Nile virus have worn off by then. Because mostly I don't think anymore. I don't plan. I just exist.'" That's just a small picture of her life. It was very interesting for me to read. I knew of her, but I didn't really know who Emily was until I read this story and got a picture of who she is and some of the difficulties that she experienced in her life. This week we are talking, looking at the book of Job. We started it last week, and so we're going to be looking into a little bit deeper. And I thought of Emily when I was thinking of some of Job's experiences. They don't really compare to Job's, but in some ways there's some similarities. And probably each of us, although we would say most of us or not all of us have ever experienced anything like Job did, that we have gone through some difficult times where we have not understood what is happening to us. And so that's why I thought of her when I was reading her story this week. As I mentioned last week, Job deals with big questions and issues. And probably the biggest question that it raises is, why do bad things happen, in particular to good people? And I'm going to keep dragging you on a little bit here because we're not going to get exactly to the answer to that question. We started last week by building a foundation to kind of help us answer that question and get to what does that mean? How do we look at that? We're not going to answer it directly, but we're going to continue to build that foundation. If you were here last week, we spent some time just looking, kind of an introduction to Job, looking at the characters. We looked at Job himself, the fact that he was a righteous man. In fact, it says that he was the most righteous man in that area, or that God pointed him out as there is no one like him on the earth. Imagine having that on your resume. There's no one like him on the earth, God. Pretty cool. He was very righteous. It describes him as a blameless man. Not perfect, but blameless. He was wealthy. He was well-respected. He was generous. And he had a great family. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. We also looked at Satan. Who Satan is. And we saw that he was subject to God. He was one that came before God. He was subject to him. We saw that he roams the earth. He goes about the earth causing lots of trouble. We looked at the fact that he is called the accuser. And this story with Job, we have him doing the same thing here that he does constantly with God's people. He accuses them. And he also accuses God before God's people. The accuser. We also notice that he's very powerful. We're going to look at a little bit closer at that today about some of his power. And then last we looked at God, some of the attributes of God. Who is God? How does he operate? And we saw that he blesses his people, that Job was blessed by God. But we also saw that God's blessing was removed from Job. We saw that God protects his people. And then we notice also that God removed at least part of his protection from Job as well. But the key point that we made last week is that God is sovereign. God is sovereign. He calls the last shots. He's in control. He answers to no one else. He is sovereign over the universe. A key point, and one of the questions that I asked you last week was, do you trust God? In a sovereign God. How do you feel about a sovereign God who is in charge of everything? And he's in control. How does that make you feel? Does it make you feel good or does it make you feel a little nervous? Depends how you look at a sovereign God. Is he somebody that you can trust? Well, today I want to take a closer look at the actual test. The testing that Job endured. And that's why I chose the title, The Test, for this message. I actually chose it last week as well, but I didn't get to that. So I changed the title of last week in retrospect. So you don't know what it is, but I changed it. So we're going to use the same title this week, The Test. What was going on here in this situation? What were the elements of this test? And then the next message we look at this, we're going to look at the why questions of why this happened. Why did this have to happen? What was going on with that? But we're not going to address those exactly this week. So I debated about calling this the test because it seems to really have more to do with a conflict between God and Satan. And it seems like Job just kind of got involved in that. He seems like an innocent bystander that got involved in this conflict that was happening here, this debate between God and Satan. But I'm going to stick with that because there's no question that Job was tested during this time. And I want to raise a question with you. How many of you feel like your faith has been tested? Anybody feel like your faith has been tested? Yeah? Okay. How many of you are facing difficulties or challenging situations right now that you just don't understand? Anybody want to be brave enough to tell us that? Okay, we have a few of you that are brave enough to say, yeah, right now, I'm going through some things that I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to think about it. I don't know how to interpret it. That's what I love about the book of Job, because the book of Job doesn't gloss over those difficult times. It lays it all out there and says these things happen, and they happen to good people. I mean, there's no question about who Job was. They happened to him as a very righteous, God-fearing person. Has anybody ever heard of the Milgram experiment? I thought of this, a couple of you. Yes, I thought of this experiment for some reason when I was thinking of this test. And I'll see if I can explain it. But it's an interesting, Dateline just in March, I think, did a kind of a reenactment of this experiment. It was very intriguing for me to watch. But basically in the experiment, you have, let's see if I can explain it, correct me if I get it wrong, but it's kind of a sociological experiment. You have two people who are supposedly participants in the experiment. You have one who is asking questions of another person. They can't see this other person. This person is hidden back, but they can hear them. They're within earshot. And then there's another person in the room who is kind of giving instructions to the one who is asking questions. And so the one in the room is kind of an authority figure, he or she, and they're telling the person who's asking the questions what to do. Now the key here is that if the person answers the question wrong, the one who's asking the questions has this shock that they can administer to them when they answer the question wrong. And so they ask the question, and then if they get it wrong, then they push a button and administer the shock. And what happens is you can adjust that all the way from down, you know, like just minimal voltage all the way up to 400 volts. An interesting test. And so they start this test out and the person asks the question, you know, and at first they start off at low voltage and the person answers the question wrong and they push the button and the person, you know, makes a noise like they got shot. Now the thing that's really happening, they don't know, is the one who's in the room is not really hooked up to the shock. Okay, they're just acting. So they act like they got shocked. And they're actually purposely giving wrong answers here and there. The idea is to see what this person who's asking the questions, how they respond to this person in authority who's telling them to administer this shock when the person answers the question wrong. Now, how many here think that, how many volts do you think you would go up to if you were doing the test? Say you were asking the question. What do you think you would do? Anybody want to say? How many would do 10 volts, you think? Nobody? Nobody would even do 10 volts? That I can tell you, 10 volts isn't really going to hurt you, okay? Unless you put it on your tongue, then you'll definitely feel it. If you ever put the 9-volt battery in your tongue, I've done that before. You can feel it. But 10 volts, wow, this is interesting. This is cool. But you know, in the experiment, you know what happened? They did this over and over again. And it's been done, it was done years ago, and it was done just recently again. Most people will keep ratcheting that thing up. They do. People who know better, you would think, you know, surely they wouldn't do it. Some people will take it all the way up to 400 volts. And what they do during the test is, as they get higher in voltage, the actor who is answering the questions wrong occasionally will start banging on the wall. And they'll start yelling. And eventually, they go completely silent. And people still keep pushing the button. Can you believe that? It's hard for me to believe. But they've done it. They've done it multiple times, and a large percentage of the people will do that. I didn't write down the exact percentage, but it's a very high percentage of people will do that. Very few will stop the test and say, "I will not do this anymore." Look it up. It's called the Milgram experiment. And I thought of this when I was thinking of tests and how we respond to tests. And testing like this. And you may be looking at the story of Job saying, I don't know. I don't know how I would respond to that test. And I want to address that question this morning. How would we respond? What assurances do we have that we would respond in the way that we would hope to the test? Any of the tests that we're experiencing or God allows us to experience. Now, I think the book of Job gives us some of the best resources of how to deal with challenges and difficulties in life. It does not answer all the questions, but it gives us, I believe, the important answers to the questions, and maybe even some of the questions we don't ask but are there looming that need to be answered. Well, last Sunday we read most of the chapter 1 and chapter 2. I'd encourage you to turn to the book of Job. We're not going to read it again today. I'll assume that you read it this past week in preparation for the message, as you know you would. So you're all ready. You've already read it. You can follow along. We're going to look at a few verses, but I'm not going to read it this morning. Most of you are probably familiar with the story, even if you haven't read it recently. So without further ado, let's look at this test that Job experienced. What is involved in this test? Well, first of all, I want to break it down in a few areas. The first I'm calling the accusation. Okay? We already identified Satan as someone who accuses believers before God. The Bible says that that's who Satan is. It's a good way of describing him. He's the accuser. God draws attention to Job here for his unparalleled righteousness and obedience, but Satan claims that this is only because of God's blessing and protection, that if Job were to lose everything, he would reject God. That is Satan's claim. If Job were to lose everything that he has, that he will surely reject God. That's the accusation. And so the question we look at, is this true? Would this happen? Was Job serving God only because or primarily because of all the good things that he was receiving, that he received from God? Was that his reasoning for serving God, for obeying God? Or was it, like the question I asked last week, was it because he trusted in a sovereign God? Was it because he trusted in who God was? Is that the reason he was serving him? Was Job serving God primarily for selfish reasons? And let's quickly bring this home. How about you? What are the reasons that you serve God? Do you think about that often? What are the reasons why you do the things you do? What are the reasons you're here this morning? What are you hoping will happen here this morning? Why are you here? What are those reasons? Is it primarily for what you can get out of it? Or are you thinking about how you want to submit to God's will for your life because he is a sovereign God? What if you had everything taken away from you, all the things that you would count as blessings? What if you had all of those things stripped away with you? How would you respond? I was thinking about it during worship time as we sang together these wonderful words, you're all I want, you're all I need, you're all I've ever wanted. Is that true? I mean, we sing those kinds of songs often during the worship time, and do we really think about them? If that's true, then it's true that everything I have could be stripped away and I would still be okay because God is all that I want, all that I need. He is everything to me. That's what I was thinking while we were singing that song. When I was recently, I was talking with a relative of mine, and they were describing a relationship, a marriage that of one of their friends that had just occurred, I think, 6 months ago. And she was talking about the basis of this relationship and some of what she considered to be pretty poor basis of the relationship. Her husband, she was friends with the lady. The lady's husband was very concerned about how his wife looked. Very concerned about weight, about her being on an exercise program. And he would say things like, don't you think you're eating too much? Or I think you're putting on a little weight, aren't you? Don't you think you ought to be out running or down at the gym? And these are the kinds of things that he would regularly say to his wife. And I was puzzled as to why you would want to go into a relationship like that, but because it was clear that this was happening before they got married. But this was, for him, this was a very strong component of the relationship, and almost seems like a primary reason that he had a wife so that she could look good for him, or maybe, I don't know, maybe somebody to hang on his arm at parties. I don't know what his reasoning was exactly. But it made me think about this again. You know, what is the basis of our relationship with each other and with God? Is Satan correct in this with Job, that the basis of the relationship, at least the primary part of it, is just based on what Job could get out of God, what he could get from God? And if that were taken away, then Job was like, he would reject him. That's the accusation that Satan was bringing. And really, there's really no other way to find this out than to allow Satan to strip Job of almost every blessing he had received from God. Now keep in mind that God did set very clear boundaries about what Satan could do. We talked about that last week. He set very clear boundaries. Would Job turn his back on God when things got too hard? And how do you respond when things get hard? Really hard. And so this test begins. Without warning or any reason, at least from Job's perspective, suddenly he's in the middle of a very difficult test. Will Job remain faithful to God, or will Satan's accusation be proven true? So, the accusation. Secondly, I want to look at is the methods that Satan used. What were the methods he used to get at Job? And before we get into that exactly, I want to look at two problems. I see two problems. There's probably more, but I want to talk about two in particular when it comes to Satan. Two problems that we have when it comes to Satan. The first one is that we take him too lightly. We discount him. We don't realize the power that he has. We're pretty careless about how we live our lives. And we just take Satan lightly, like, it's in the Bible, it's just kind of a fairy tale. There's not really all this crazy stuff going on in the spiritual realm. I don't really need to worry about him. So I see that as a problem, that we take Satan too lightly. I also see the opposite problem, that some people take him too seriously. In fact, they're looking for Satan behind every bush. And they're actually maybe even intrigued with that realm, with demonic things, and they get caught up in that. And in some ways, I've seen people just, it takes over their life. That's what they're interested in. They think that is where spirituality is at. And so they're just very preoccupied with demonic forces and the evil that is in Satan. So I see two problems there. We need to keep those in mind as we look at this. We need a proper view of who Satan is, of his influence, of his power. And I think the book of Job is where we get some of the best answers about who Satan is and what he's about. So we need a proper view. Now, in this test, Satan left no doubt that Job was experiencing supernatural opposition and calamity. There's no question. If you look at how these events took place, he scripted it very tightly, these events that happened in Job's life. I call it a shock and awe campaign. You see these happen right at one after another, beginning in chapter 1, verse 13. I don't know how to say these guys' names. I'm going to say Sabaeans. You see them come in and capture the oxen and the donkeys, 500 oxen, 500 donkeys gone, all the servants killed except for one. And he's the one that comes back and gives a message to Job. And while he's delivering this message, another one comes. It says, the fire from God came down and burned up the sheep.
there's 7,000 sheep, okay? So, wow. Most commentators would say this is lightning. We're going to talk a little bit more about, well, let's talk about it right now. Fire from God. What is this? It's a description that the servant gave in describing. Lightning would be a likely thing. It could even be supernatural fire, I think, possibly. That's kind of how I've always read that, is this is kind of supernatural fire, and actually this much lightning to kill 7,000 sheep seems significant to me. So whatever it was, it seemed like a supernatural storm, whether it's lightning or fire, kills all the sheep. So he's delivering this message, and then another messenger shows up and says the Chaldeans swept in and took all the camels, killed all the servants except one who is able to come back and tell Job what had happened. And then the last one, the wind swept into the house where Job's children were dining together, as they often did, collapsed the house, and killed all of his children. Now, these aren't long messages, so this could have probably happened in maybe 5 or 10 minutes of these messengers coming. How do you respond to supernatural, it's evident that this is supernatural calamity that is happening to Job? You can't look at it and say, well, it's just, you wouldn't look at it and say, that's just coincidence, you know, just things happen. You know, we all have a bad day occasionally. No, this is not just one of those bad days. This is supernatural calamity. Satan timed these events carefully and caused these things to happen in a very short period of time. Well, what did the accuser want to happen? What did Satan want to happen, do you suppose? Well, of course, he's put this argument out here. He wanted Job to accuse God of doing wrong. He wanted to break the trust of Job in God. He wanted to present God not only as untrustworthy, but even as God's, as Job's opponent. It's interesting to me, this fire from God. It almost, you know, you could almost read that the servant thought that God had done this, that this was from God. So I think Satan wanted Job to believe that God was opposing him. And so the question, did God do this? Well, he must have at least allowed it, correct? Because Satan could do nothing unless God allows it. So at least we know that he allowed it. We see that very clearly, that God removes his protection. He still maintains a boundary, but he pulls back his protection and allows Satan to do this. Satan loves to raise this question with us. Why did God do this? Why is this happening to me? Satan loves for us to dwell on that question, just tear it apart. What is God doing to me? And, you know, I think as humans, we're going to look at this next message, we love to try and answer that question, don't we? We love to answer it for other people in particular. Well, this is happening to you because blah, blah, blah. Pretty easy. We'll see Job's friends try and do that for him. I'm not criticizing pastors here, but I remember when 9/11 happened, and I remember hearing lots of messages about why this happened, why 9/11 happened. I don't know why it happened. I'm not sure any of us will either find out, or maybe someday we'll find out. We know some reasons why bad things happen. And right here we see some reasons why these bad things happened to Job. But Job, I don't think he ever found out why this happened, exactly what was going on. So I think we have to be cautious about just throwing out answers as to why things happen, why bad things happen, especially to other people, situations that we're not in the middle of, that we don't necessarily understand. We need to be careful about that. But that's the question that we're going to deal with in the next message. So we see Satan comes, kind of uses this shock and awe campaign to take all of Job's possessions away from him. And from this we see that Satan has significant power. We talked about this last week. He has power. And if you look at these situations, it's interesting to look at the kind of situations that happen. First we have these people that come in and steal. We have this happen two different times. So Satan has power over groups of people. They came in under being influenced by Satan. They came in and stole Job's possessions, and they killed his servants. And so we see Satan has power in that regard. We see that he has power in nature. And I don't know that I've thought about this often, but we see this this catastrophic thing that happened to the sheep, and then also to the house where Job's sons and daughters were living, that Satan controlled the wind to hit the house, and the lightning or whatever fire that was that consumed the sheep. And so we see that he has significant power. We cannot take that lightly. We also see in the second phase of the test where Satan was able to strike, God lowered yet another boundary and allowed Satan to strike Job's body with illness. Sounds like a terrible, awfully painful illness to me, to be covered with boils, itching, scratching, a lot of pain, it sounds like. It sounds awful, and we see Satan was allowed to do that. And so we need to understand that Satan does have power. He has significant power. But the last thing we talk about power with Satan again is that we need to realize that it's a derived power. How much power does he have? Well, he only has as much power as God will allow him. God sets a limit, sets a boundary, and says you cannot go past that. And Satan has no choice. And we see in the story, he didn't go past it. He couldn't. He didn't have a choice. He couldn't go past that. So his power is limited by God. He stays exactly within the constraints that God defined. Now it can be very helpful to understand that we face a powerful and crafty adversary in Satan. His influence is the cause of the terrible things we see and experience in the world. We do not serve a twisted God who takes pleasure in or carelessly allows evil. Satan would like us to believe that. That God is taking pleasure in it or he's just carelessly allowing things to happen. We do not serve a God like that. God was very deliberate in what he allowed Satan to do and what he didn't allow him to do. All right, so we see the accusation, we see some of the methods here that Satan used, and let's finish with the results of the test. And we're only going to look at the initial results of the test that we find in chapter 1 and chapter 2. Does Job pass the test? That's the question. Yes, he does. He passes the test, but we can't make too much light of that. It's a very hard thing. It was very hard for Job. You see how he responds to these things. At first it says that he tears his clothes and shaves his head, which are signs of grief, great grief. And after his body is afflicted with boils, we find him sitting in ashes, which is yet another sign of great grief. There is no question that Job experienced tremendous difficulty and pain and anguish during this time. We cannot make light of that. It's easy to look and see what Joe, how he responded and say, wow, that's cool. You know, he just had a great response. But that's not the whole story. Job suffered much in this. We can't minimize his pain. And yet Job does not respond foolishly. He does not respond with careless accusations against God. His response is an inspiration to us all. I'd like to read it in chapter 1. It says, verse 20, "Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised.' In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing." Well, it's an amazing response, isn't it? An amazing response. And I'm wondering, is that an inspiration to you when you're experiencing difficulties? Or when you look at Job's difficulties, is this an inspiration to you? Well, it might not be. You might be looking at it and saying, "That I don't think I can do that." Anybody look at that and think, "I'm not sure I could do that. I've thought that many times. I'm not sure I could do that. What if I really had to do this? I'm not sure I could do that." And so when I look at Job, I'm not sure I'm inspired. I'm more scared. Like, okay, so Job, yeah, he was able to do this, but what about me? What about when I face difficulties? Am I going to be able to be like Job and rise up in those difficulties? If I were to experience these kinds of things, what would I do? So, is it an inspiration? It depends how you look at it. Could I stand up? Sometimes I look at this and I think it seems impossible. And maybe you're already feeling that way about the things in your life right now. Some of you were honest and said, "You know what? I'm in the middle of some stuff right now that I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going on. I don't understand it." And maybe you're thinking, or the thought has occurred to you, "Am I going to make it through this? Am I going to survive? Am I going to come out on the other side? Will I be able to look back sometime and say, wow, I made it through that test?" Maybe that's what you're feeling. I want to remind you of a few things. First of all, I want to remind you that God sets the parameters of the test. Satan didn't define this test at all. God set the parameters, and Satan had to work within those parameters. Do you think he would set Job up to lose? Do you think he would do that? Just set him up to fail. Does God do that? Does he set people up just to fail? No, we know that's not true. God does not do that. He doesn't set people up to fail. I don't believe he had any intention of losing this debate with Satan. I don't think he had any intention of losing it. In fact, I wonder about it, if it's even possible for him, was it possible for him to lose this debate? Interesting question for discussion. Well, Job was an amazing man of faith, and God knew it. God knew who he was. He called him out. He pointed to him and said, "This guy is a righteous man." He knew what Job could handle. And he was confident that Job was going to pass this test. He allowed Job to be pushed to the limit. Absolutely. This is being pushed to the limit. There's no question Job was pushed to the limit, but he was not pushed past the limit. I want to read a verse from 1 Corinthians 10, 13. This may be a verse that you would like to memorize when you're in the middle of difficulties. It says, "And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it." This is a parameter that is laid out. on all tests that happen. And we might debate sometimes whether that's true, and we feel like in the middle of it that we cannot stand in the test. I felt that way often in the middle of a test that I'm struggling with. But the truth is that we will not be tempted beyond what we can bear. God sets the boundary. He's the one that sets that. He's not careless about it. It's not like he's not paying attention sometimes and he lets some stuff slip through. That's not how God works. He sets the boundary. Now, we're not always happy with where he sets the boundary. We don't always agree with it. And sometimes we chafe and fight against that and wonder, why is the boundary there? It should be back here. But God's the one who sets that. Nobody else does. He will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. He knows exactly what Job could handle, and he knows exactly what you could handle. And maybe it's true. Where you're at in your walk with God, your maturity, you may not have been able to handle what Job could handle there. I don't know. But God didn't give us Job's test. He doesn't give me. He gives me Rob's test. What I need right now for where I'm at, that's the kind of test that he allows to happen in my life. And that's what he allowed to happen to Job. He knows you. He knows what you need. He knows what can be allowed for you to struggle with and what he needs to protect you from. He defines that boundary. And I know, for me, I look back at situations that happened in my life and I say, you know what? I can't believe I came through that okay. There are situations that have happened to me and I think, wow, how did I do that? If I would have known that was going to happen tomorrow, I would have said, you know, I don't think I'm going to handle that. But looking back, I can see many times of difficult situations where God has brought me through that. I was talking with Amber Enderby a while back. Some of you know her. Amber, Corey and Amber used to attend here. And you know that her sister was gone for 3 weeks, just disappeared. They didn't know where she was, didn't know if she was killed, didn't know if she had run off with her boyfriend. Lots of questions going on. And I think I could say this with Amber being okay with it, but she can be a worrier. And people would tell her, you know, we're just kind of surprised at how you're handling this. And she said, you know, I'm kind of surprised how I handled it. She says, because normally, you know, these are the kinds of things that would just send me, you know, off the deep end. And especially looking back at it, she says, you know, I'm just surprised at how I came through that and was able to handle that situation. And it's just a testimony of what God can do in a person's life. The strength that he provides that we don't even know, you know, where it comes from, but it's there at the time of the struggle. God provides a way out so that you can stand up under it. He does not set you up to fail. No, he doesn't. We don't understand, and we will not understand why things happen the way they do. And we don't get to see this side of the story like we can see with Job here. And he didn't get to see it. But God promises that he will never give us more than what we can handle. Most of us may not have been able to handle this experience, like I said. But there are no mistakes. God doesn't just let things slip through. He does not make mistakes. He is setting the parameters. And yes, there is suffering and there is evil. Satan is busy at work and his influence is great, but God has carefully set the limits in each of our lives. People of true faith, he doesn't set us up to fail. We pass the test. People of true faith do not reject God. They will not turn against him. They may question him a lot, and we'll see a lot of those questions coming up that Job asked. And probably when we get to that section, a lot of us will be able to identify a little bit more with Job on some of asking those kinds of questions. Why are these things happening? But people of true faith trust in a sovereign God. Now, there are those who are primarily in it for what they can get out of it. There is no question about that. So the test, the accusation that Satan was making is true of some people. But some people are just into religion, God, because it's a thing to do, and they're looking for what is in it for me. What can I get out of this? And so when something happens, it may not even be a very big thing. When difficulty happens, they quickly fall away. And Jesus describes this as the rocky soil. We have a clear picture of that in the New Testament. Jesus describes these people as the rocky soil. Springs up, and then when trouble happens, they quickly die. The plant quickly dies and fades. These are not people of true faith. A person of true faith does not need to be afraid that they will fail the test. We do not have to be afraid that we will fail the test. God has given us a way out. Should we be ready? Definitely. Should we be prepared for those difficulties that are going to come? Absolutely. We should not be careless about that. We need to be prepared. We need to be as ready as possible. But do we need to be fearful? No, we don't. Do we need to be intimidated? No, we don't need to be intimidated. In John chapter 10, Jesus says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand." We do not need to be afraid that we will be snatched out of God's hand, or that we'll face some test that is just too difficult for us, and we will reject God. God always gives us a way out. He doesn't always give us the answers as to why we're going through that test, but he always gives us a way out. We will be tested. The tests that we face are difficult. Satan, the accuser, is busy. He's crafty. He's powerful. And the whole world suffers the effects of his influence. He knows our weaknesses, and he will exploit those weaknesses. We may not know what in the world is going on, and most of the time, you know, we don't know. But we do know some important things. If we are true followers of God, if we are God's sheep, if we are followers of Christ, we do not need to fear. Our God and Father, who is greater than all, will not allow us to be tempted beyond what we can bear. Neither will he let anyone snatch us from his hand. We can prevail. We can survive. We can pass the tests that come our way. And as it says in 1 Peter, "May our faith of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, be proved genuine and result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed." Let's pray. Father, thank you for the confidence that we can have in you, that you are a sovereign God, that you set the parameters, that you are in control, and that you will not allow anything to come at us that is more difficult than what we can handle. Help us to cling to that truth in the middle of those situations where we feel that way. We feel like we're in situations that are just too difficult for us to handle. Help us to cling to you during those times and the truth that we know about you. And Father, I pray that as we go into this coming week and month and the things coming up this fall, the challenges that we will face, that we would step forward with confidence in you, with humility, recognizing our own position compared to you and our need for you and for your power to be at work in us, our need for your protection. Help us to give thanks for the blessings that you shower on us, God, because you do shower us with many blessings. And help us to trust you when some of those blessings are removed, or when we experience difficulty and pain that we do not understand. Help us to trust you as our sovereign God. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.